for the general manager corporate service from Mahashur. Mr. Logan Watt, general manager communications and corporate relations.
What is it that distinguishes SARS? What is it that makes SARS to be regarded in the public sector broadly as an area of excellence? And when you said you basically would like to be heard on your interventions today, I suppose that we welcome it from this side, you know, because I think this is what makes excellent entities to stay at the front of the pack. And I think that is one of the things.
I didn't mean it.
But in any case, we welcome it. So there's a whole contingent of senior managers from SARS. I'll basically hand over to the commissioner so that at least we'll have more time to deal with the actual input. We'll have more time to pose some of the questions and raise areas of concern or areas that we believe that they need greater attention. This is a continuum. It's a continuation of a modernization initiative that has basically been evolving. And it's something that I think will indicate in the report that some ground has been covered, but quite clearly there are certain focal areas, as it will be indicated in the presentation, that are enjoying ongoing attention. And I think with those few words, Chairperson, I'll invite the Commissioner basically to take over. Thank you.
Chairperson and members of the committee, Deputy Minister and my colleagues, thank you very much once again for the opportunity to present an update of the strategic plan which we presented to you on the 15th of May 2007. We call it an update, Chair, because the plan that we presented last year set out quite clearly, if you like, the kind of direction that SARS needs to pursue over the next 5 to 7 years and the broad programs that need to be addressed in the course of pursuing that strategic direction. We also outlined in that plan some of the fundamental changes that need to take place in order for SARS to accomplish what it needs to accomplish. So today, what we want to cover with you, Chair, and I'll take you, this is on slide 2 of the presentation, is to make a few introductory remarks, take you through some recollections of the strategic plan and some of the work done, and under modernization, tell you what the focus areas of our current work is and what we intend to deliver in the next 12 to 18 months. And then under business operations, look at some of the operational deliverables that we'll be going through. Just as a reflection of our work last year, Chair, you'll remember that in February this year, the Minister increased our revenue target to 571 billion rands, and SARS delivered 571.8 billion rands. We found early in this year that the economic conditions had certainly changed quite significantly, and as we point out in the slide, we had to then do some extraordinary things, and I think the SARS management and SARS staff need to be congratulated. One example of the extraordinary things is, as we point out in the slide, 500,000 telephone calls in 9 working days, as a result of which some 300,000 taxpayers were contacted to remind them of what they owe SARS and the fact that it's due before the 31st. This was backed up, of course, by a number of other logistical arrangements. At the end of a financial year, sometimes at the end of a month, the most useful tactic for a business person is to send default checks, what we call RD checks. So you don't put your signature in deliberately, or you forget the date, or you insert 2008, you put in 9, or there's a wrong amount in words compared to the numbers. And on any one day, we could have about anything between 10 and 50 million rands in those sorts of checks. It means that we've got to pursue each one and make sure that a fresh check is actually issued and deposited, because there's huge advantage in cash flow terms if that check gets held up, for example, for a week. But at the year end, we can't afford those things. This year, our target is 642 billion rands, and at this stage, it's too early to say whether it's a doable target or not, Chair. safe to say that there are a number of economic factors around us. The high inflation, which is positive on the one side, but impacts upon consumption on the other hand. The evidence of reduced consumption in the marketplace. Rising interest rates, which is impacting on, for example, property sales and other things. And the profitability of businesses of different types being impacted upon both by global conditions and South African factors. So, if you like, we're reserving judgment at this point in time. We're saying, give us another 4 to 6 months and let's see what patterns are emerging before we can comment any further. What we want to do briefly is to recollect what we said to the committee, and it's a copy of a slide we presented to you in 2004. And the next three, this slide summarizes what originally was three slides. But three messages come through here. We said we want to move in an outward direction, meaning that bureaucrats normally tend to be very inward focused. One of the cultural changes, if you like, we want to make in SARS is to ensure that our staff see the public as the focus of their attention and the kind of service that they offer as a priority that they need to focus their minds on. But that also involves understanding the taxpayer, and it's a point I'll come back to in a moment. The second thing we said is that we are drowned in a lot of paper, and we need to, where possible, automate. And last year in the strategic plan, we indicated, if you like, the narrowing of the waste diagram, which I'll come back to in a moment, where a lot of the paperwork, if we can automate, we can then free human resources to do more useful work. And the strategy we pointed out we want to move towards is one where our resources are focused on service and outreach on the one hand and enforcement on the other hand. That's linked to point three, which is that if we have more intelligent insights into the taxpayer and their behaviors and so on, a point again that I will come back to, then we are in a position to focus our limited enforcement resources more sharply. And this diagram on slide six covers this. If you look at streamlining the middle, which is what we said last year, increasing our outreach and increasing our enforcement and specialization. One of the programs that we said last year we would put into place, Chair, is the program one called the Differentiated Operating Model. And the outcome of this is this slide. And in your update document, not the slides, on page 19, there's a better copy of this slide. And it's a crisp summary of lots of work done over about 6 months to understand the South African tax base, to distinguish between individuals, businesses, and let's call it special categories of organizations, and what is called in that diagram agents or intermediaries. And for each one of them, we've got some numbers, we've got some understanding of what role they play or what revenue they contribute, what their needs are, what kind of service that they might require, what kind of educational input they might require, but equally what the risks are in each of those sectors, and therefore what kind of enforcement efforts need to be focused on them. What we will be doing as a result of that work is to set up what we call a customer segment unit, and each of these segments will now have a focused team that continues to understand them better, undertake surveys amongst them, and our business, if you like, over the next few years will then be adapted to meet their requirements, pretty much similar to what a financial institution or other areas of business would be doing. On slide 8 is the point that I've just made: increase service, education and outreach, streamline and automate, and increase enforcement and service. On slide 9, in taking last year's strategic plan forward, we want to reiterate what we said last year, that it will be a 5 or more years program, if you like, that we will take it in three waves, if you remember, which is on slide 11, Chair, captured here, and that we would focus on certain things in the immediate. But for SARS, Chair, what this meant from last year is to separate, if you like, focusing on normal business, if you like, and focusing on the modernization aspect. And it meant creating capacity on both sides to handle both sides, because the one thing we couldn't afford is to start focusing on modernization and neglect the fact that we have to deliver 642 billion rands, or 571 last year. It also meant that we needed to develop an execution focus, which both in the private and public sector is often a problem. There are many plans on the table or on the shelf, but the key is how we deliver them. And certainly my colleagues have done a very good job in beginning to demonstrate that these things can in fact be done. To assist us further, as you will see on slide 9 here, we try to distinguish between modernization projects, which are huge changes, if you like, and fundamentally revise the way we work, what we call impactful improvements, which take a step further from where we are on a particular matter, for example, improving VAT registration, which we have done recently, and the normal day-to-day business. And this helps us to work out how do we distribute our resources and what kind of focus we give them. These are the 10 programs we talked about last year. This is the periodization or phasing of the delivery of the modernization program. And what you see there in the 5 bullet points below on slide 11 is a set of 5 deliverables. Operations refers to the back office part largely. Service we'll come back to is how we interact with the public and reduce the load on them. Risk is how do we detect non-compliance, and how do we find the non-compliant in a more targeted and easy way. Customs is what contribution we make at the border. We're just one of many agencies that operates at the border. But what can we do to strengthen border control, particularly at border posts? And what are the support things that are required in order to deliver? What I will do now, Chair, is to focus on, firstly, what has happened in respect of the personal income tax or PAYE area in our business. Just as a reminder, on slide 13, we outlined what, if you like, our basic compliance philosophy is and was always. You've heard this from us before. And it's, to put it crisply, it's make compliance as easy as possible for the compliant and make non-compliance as hard as possible for those that want to duck taxes in one way or another. And we've also informed you in the past about the balance between education, service, and enforcement. In 2007, Chair, as part of implementing that strategic plan, something that we thought we would only do two years later, we began to do last year, and as individual taxpayers, you began to see it last year as well. And we started with the sort of personal income tax area because, as we point out on slide 14, there are large numbers of personal and financial and technology resources that are utilized in this area. Lots of paperwork comes in from the personal income tax side. And particularly the related side, the so-called PAYE, that is the money that the employer deducts and pays over to SARS, the theme that you'll hear a lot about later. Unless we begin to understand and reform that area, government's objective of delivering a social security system will not take off, because in all likelihood the PAYE system or our relationship with the employer or the state's relationship with the employer is crucial to deducting money and paying over or paying money back to workers. As you know, there's been talk about a wage subsidy, so talk at this stage, but if it does happen, this is a mechanism through which some of those things will actually happen. So as a result, on slide 15, we explain how we will move from paper to electronic processes. Last year, we said, don't give us any supporting documents. We'll find the information somewhere else, and you'll find this a theme that becomes stronger as we go later into this presentation, that we will introduce a more sophisticated risk engine, which, amongst other things, will bring in statistical and mathematical ways of trying to work out where problems might arise in a particular individual's affairs, where things don't match, and you'll see it in a moment, Chair, when I explain it with a diagram. But importantly, what we wanted was quicker processing of income tax returns, a better service to the public, and if somebody's entitled to a refund, a quicker refund. To some extent, we've achieved it last year, but as usual, anything new brings challenges with it, and I'll come back to that. So the key changes last year are on slide 16. I don't intend to go through all of them. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it now because you also went through it. But we automated internally this process, simplified the return, start to focus on e-filing, and all of this, Chair, helped us to serve the public better. This is elaborated on slide 17, where the automated tax processor is the back-end engine, if you like, that our technology colleagues created, where over 4 million returns were processed last year through the system. E-filing is quite noteworthy, 35,000 the previous year, Chair, and over 1 million South Africans used the e-filing system last year. We expect that to grow further this year. The scanning facility are basically document scanners in one operation in Alberton, which many of you visited in August last year, and that alone handled 1 million returns in respect of last year's operations. The branch front end is where in the past our staff would assist taxpayers to fill in their returns manually. This was now done on the computer where taxpayers could see what was being transferred. A printout was then made and given to them, and over 500,000 South Africans utilized this facility. In terms of what the outcome was of this process, the average turnaround time, as you can see on slide 18, reduced from 45-55 days to 20-30 days. We hope that will even improve as we go further into operating the system. And the assessments then came out quicker. In the case of 32% of the returns we received, they were processed in 48 hours, and you can see 40% within 10 days. Slide 19 elaborates further on 2007, where as a result of, I want to take you to slide 20 first, Chair. And in essence, what slide 20 says is that this is an outline of the process. Stage one is, was the return completed properly, and does it have all the information that's required? Step two is whether the information is accurate, and does it compare with the information, that is the information provided by the taxpayer, as it compared to the information provided by the employer, and it's a theme we will come back to. Are there any outstanding obligations of a taxpayer? How do we apply the risk rules? In other words, are you asking for something on transport allowance that sounds ridiculous? Is your medical aid deduction out of order in compared to the norm? And now we are beginning to develop an automated engine that begins to do that rather than the human mind only being utilized to do it. And as a result, you can see 600,000 returns on slide 20 were sent back because details were incomplete. Or 400,000 returns were also sent back because the information didn't match. The employer, the individual's information did not match with the employer's information, and so on. Now, this is what ultimately also throws up instances which require further audit or investigation because something doesn't look right, if you want to put it in simple terms. But the improvements that we undertook last year, Chair, also brought challenges with it, to put it mildly. We found that in transposing numbers from an IRP 5 certificate to a tax return, taxpayers made errors. And so when the employer sends the information, that information doesn't match what the employee wrote down in the tax return itself. So we've got to do a lot more educational work and assist people and do other things which will minimize these difficulties. So slide 21 spells out some of those challenges. In some instances, SARS itself had, SARS staff had finger trouble, where even despite our double verification system, there were mistakes made within SARS. There were large data differences, and I've repeated this many times, between what taxpayers gave us, what employers gave us, and what the third parties like banks gave us, in terms of, for example, interest that was earned by a particular individual. And what also happened was that there was huge strain on our call centers because that jump from 35,000 to 1 million people using the e-filing system meant that a lot more people wanted help. How do I do this? And a number of people, we would give them their passwords, but then they forget their passwords and they'll phone back and say, what was my password? Or give me a new one. And that would then crowd our system. So we learned a lot of lessons about, if you like, human frailties and human tendencies, and we'll have to start compensating for them as we go forward. arising from these lessons, then we present to you what we're going to do this year. And our intent is that in 2008 we would, as slide 22 points out, accelerate the program to fully automate the PIT process. And as you saw from the support pack that we sent to you, one of the documents in the support pack was the OECD document on pre-populated returns, or pre-filled returns as they call it, and the experience of Denmark and Sweden amongst other countries around the world. So our ambition here is to provide those South Africans that have relatively simple so-called financial affairs, and eventually many more, pre-populated returns so that they can, in some instances, just sign and return them to us. And ultimately, as you saw in that document, some countries have all of that done on the Internet itself. So there's no paper that is exchanged. So X years ahead, I suppose, that can be something that is part of our vision, where many millions of South Africans will be able to transact with the tax administration on the same basis as they do in Sweden or Denmark or several other countries which are going to move in that direction. But the second aspect is what that document refers to as the reporting requirements of certain agencies like financial institutions, banks, and others who are able to provide information to the tax administration on assets that individuals have or could have. And in South Africa, our reporting and what we used to call and so-called third-party data is a culture battle, if you like, that we are just getting into, and which this year we begin to take forward in a more significant way. So the second bullet point is about the collection, but more accurately, it's actually the reporting and verification of third-party data. And principally, third-party data for employees share comes from employers. And employers, for example, will be deducting medical aid, will be giving transport allowances, will be giving other forms of fringe benefits, or might be deducting insurance payments and so on. Now, if we can, and once we improve the flow of reports from employers, it will make a huge difference to the kind of service that we can offer, which is the essential theme of what we're going to do this year. The risk engine for PIT and PAYE is basically an upgrade of what I've already described here in terms of how do we set checks, if you like, or verification processes to ensure that we're getting the right information. We want to enhance our ability to resolve matters the first time around when taxpayers contact us rather than forcing them to contact us repeatedly. And obviously all of this, Chair, has organizational implications as we move forward. So what is it that we are saying for employers? The current process, which is described on slide 24, is as you see it there. Employers today, on a monthly basis, deduct PAYE from their employees, and they're required to pay to SARS in terms of the Income Tax Act. Smaller employers generally play games here, because this is where cash flow advantage can be gained. So if you delay your payment to SARS by a week or a month, then you have the cash in your hand. Similar things, as you know, we've told you before, happens with VAT as well. But this is what the law requires them to do. They're required to keep records for 5 years of what the employee's deductions were. And this is when we say we have PIT audits. This is what our auditors go to inspect to see if all of these figures reconcile with what we have. But the key is what happens at the end of the year. The employer is required to total all the deductions that were made from employees and all the payments that have been made to SARS. And these amounts must balance or reconcile. And we'll show you some forms which will be used this year undertake this particular function. In the law, within 60 days of the year end, employers are required to submit a form called the EMP 501, or it's a reconciliation form, which says what I've deducted and what I've paid and anything else that has happened between the employer and employee is recorded in this form. And details of what we all know as the IRP 5 certificates, the tax certificate, is also provided to SARS. This is then submitted or as a declaration to SARS to say that all of the deductions were made accurately, all of the payments were made accurately, and they balance out with each other. What currently happens is that this submission or declaration to SARS can be backed up with lots of piles of paper or a disk and some paper and lots of corrections. For example, as we point out on slide 25, can accompany the submission on an annual basis. So if people were paid a late bonus or if there was a retrospective salary increase, then the paperwork increases because that information has to be supplied to SARS as well, as slide 25 points out. In many cases at the moment, SARS is left to do the reconciliation work between deductions and payments. And there's also errors, as slide 25 points out, in the information that's provided for SARS. What we're proposing this year, Chair, is a new approach to employers, where SARS has and will have developed by the 1st of July a new free software, which will be provided to all employers, big and small. And this will then simplify the process that I've just outlined for you in the earlier slide, where if all of the information of the employer and employees is filled into the software, then all of the paperwork and reconciliation processes will work. And as this slide 26 points out, once the simplification has been enabled, if you like, by the software and the processes that we say there, what's the PAYE liability, what was deducted, what was paid over, what's reflected in the IRP file, and if there is either a balance owing to SARS or a balance owing by SARS, that would be indicated in the reconciliation process, and that will then enable us to understand where a particular employer's matters stand. Now, in the event that employers don't have access to technology, then there's an equally efficient manual process that they could undertake, or they could come to a SARS branch office and get assistance where there are smaller employers involved. So there is an option. What this means, Chair, is that this year, the same 60-day window after the year end, so to speak, has been delayed to the 1st of July, and that's why we informed employers earlier this year, don't issue your certificates, don't undertake this work, there's something coming that will assist you. So this year, there's an employer filing season in addition to an individual or employee filing season. And the employer filing season is from the 1st of July to the 29th of August. And once the minister launched this last week, the period between the 15th of May and the 30th of June is what we're calling a preparation period, where we will contact employers and the individual taxpayers, tell them what is involved in getting this system enhanced and what the documentation and preparations they have. That software, once it's available on the 1st of July, will enable the employers to carry out the processes, as I mentioned earlier in the slide. Now, one of the, if you like, disincentives that we've built in is the third point on slide 27, which is that in order to encourage, to put it mildly, employers to do the right thing and do it in a complete and accurate way, at the moment we are taking a view that the employees of an employer that does not submit the right reconciliation or the right EMP 501 with it balancing out and so on will not be able to access their tax return. And there will be a delay, let alone in accessing the tax return, but also in assessing that particular tax return. Now, that does, Chair, set up a dynamic between employees and employers, and we are consulting in the marketplace to see how we manage this particular process. There are stringent new penalties for non-compliance of employers. They've had a fairly relaxed approach until now, and these penalties are required to get, if you like, more discipline into the system. Equally, there will be a new risk engine for PAYE as well, so that if there are employers who are sending us information that doesn't balance out, or if there's other information available to us, we can detect the non-compliant employer. Now, let's call it the reconciliation process or declaration process, Chair, as we go forward over the next 3 to 5 years, has to become more frequent. it needs to become more frequent, because if the government moves towards social security deductions, then there has to be, as you saw from that OECD document, more frequent reconciliation of the details of an individual, whether the individual still works for that particular employer, what the bank details of the individuals are, and so on. At the moment, it's a very painful process, both for the taxpayer and for ourselves. And if we can get, if you like, intermediaries like employers to take on some of these responsibilities, we create a smoother system for everyone concerned. So what slide 28 is saying is that we need to move to a regime where from annual declarations, we need to move to 6 monthly and quarterly declarations, and eventually, in an ideal world, real-time reconciliation between an employer's details and a tax administration details. But that's something that many of us might not see. Now, what does this mean for individuals? Just to remind us that the object of all of this is so that we can make it easier for the individual. And we can only make it easier if the employer and other reporting agencies or third-party agencies give us the information that's required to make it easier for the employee or individual. So, as you remember, this is a repeat of a previous slide, we said earlier that taxpayers had difficulty in correctly filling their returns, etc., and that's what we capture once again on slide 30. So what are we saying for individuals this year, Chair? We're saying that certain employees fitting into a strict set of criteria will not have to submit returns this year. And that's those who earn less than 120,000 rand, have only had a single employer throughout that year, and have no additional income or deductions other than those which are customary for that particular individual. Now, these are narrow criteria, so not everybody who is earning 120,000 fits into this, but we suspect that several hundred thousand taxpayers will now benefit by not having to submit a return, because the employer information will enable us over time to actually understand what their tax affairs are. There will be a customized return, meaning that if you have a simple requirement, you will get a simple form. If you have a more complex requirement, you'll have a more complex form. And this will be, on the internet, it will be automated. So you can then request you want additional X, Y, and Z, or you can say, I just want a simple return and I want to submit it. A key factor that this one doesn't mention, Chair, is that taxpayers will receive, as I said, that date at the end, a request form. It's a letter which will explain that this year we are not mailing tax returns to everyone. Now, for example, it's a huge waste of money to mail tax returns to the 1 million people who used e-filing last year, to the 500,000 odd people who came to TLAAS to fill in their returns. And so we can cut costs this way. Now, so it's an experiment again. It's a bold one. I must declare it to you. And it's a culture shift. Which is required, so we'll be sensitive to any feedback from the public, but this is the direction, Chair, that we are taking. The returns will be pre-populated with IRP5 data, so I've gone through where the data will come from. We've now gone towards multilingual returns in the language that you prefer, and obviously this year will again be an experimental phase, and we'll improve as we go further and get feedback. We'll have to improve and upgrade our call centers to contact centers. There will be tax calculators provided in case you want to pay us more tax than you think you need to. It's geared, Chair, to add 10 rounds every now and again. That's off the record. And then, as I said, there is the request form as well. What individuals should do in the period of preparation, 15th of May to the 30th of June, or when their particular filing season starts, is to collect the necessary documents, talk to their employer, make sure that the employer is doing the things that is required of them, so that there aren't any hitches later. But what is key, Chair, in South Africa, because we don't have this automated relationship that a Denmark or a Sweden has in terms of getting the personal information of taxpayers, is for taxpayers to contact us and say, I've changed my address, I've changed my bank, but ahead of time, so that if there is a refund, and if we have the correct banking details, then the refund will go within X days into the bank account. If we don't have the correct details, as we pointed out in the earlier slide, we'll be stuck. But, of course, we want to encourage more and more people to register for e-filing. So that's also key, so that we can increase from the million to beyond that number. This is our vision of the future. So it could be Mr., Mrs., Miss, Kumalo, Smith, Van Heerden, Naidu, whatever, that all you will receive is this letter which says, we've paid you a refund of 3,700 odd rand and hope you're happy with it. And we don't need to bother you too much as the South African Revenue Service. But it'll take us a few years to get there. But that's the ambition, if you like. These proposals, Chair, for this year in implementing the modernization program will bring benefits to employers, as we point out on slide 34, and to individuals. And the overall objective is reduce the compliance burden and costs, increase the service proposition, but also increase our ability to trap the non-compliant. As I pointed out, this is a culture change for all of us, and we hope that you as a committee, employers in South Africa, and we've already started consultation processes with them, and individuals will work with us so that South Africa can have a much better system in a few years' time. And can be proud to be amongst the leading tax administrations in the world. In sum, on slide 36, we are saying there are three periods in this year's tax season, if you like. The first is the 15th of May to 30th of June. Get all your documents ready. Talk to your employer. Employers will be approached, or they should approach us, to become familiar with how the new software will work. When will it be available? For example, my colleague Barry Ho and his team have been talking to people in South Africa who produce payroll software. And most of our top businesses use payroll software produced by one or other software developer in South Africa. And there's an organization that brings all of these people together. And we have their fullest cooperation to make these changes and work with us as we go forward. Period two is the employer filing season, as I mentioned earlier on. And period three, 1st of September to the 21st of November, is the individual filing season. And then there's some allowances and flexibility if you're filing up to January next year. Now, I'm going to sweep through some of the rest quickly, Chair, so that we have time to interact. But this means quite significant changes in a few areas. As I said earlier, our call centers need to be upgraded to contact centers. On slide 37, you'll see there's four tiers through which somebody could receive assistance, depending on complexity or simplicity, whichever way you see it. IVR means interactive voice response, and that's where sometimes it gets a bit irritating, but it's to save time and cost for everyone concerned. If you simply want a tax return, there's this voice machine through which you can interact with SARS and get your tax return. If you want something a little bit more complex, Tier 2 will be a better trained call center agent than we've had until now. If you want a little bit more detail about VAT or about income tax, it's Tier 3. And Tier 4 is where there's fundamental policy decisions to be made which require a more skilled individual to interact with you. We now have, on the service side, a better ability to track each of these requests from taxpayers and ensure that they've been dealt with on a proper basis. The third-party data reform I've been referring to right from the beginning, Chair, and as you saw in the OECD documents, this is a crucial area for South Africa in terms of getting the reporting requirements back. All of this, I'm competing. I know. I thought this was part of your disruption tactic, Chair, but slide 39, Chair, is this point about risk engines. None of this can happen. None of this simplification can happen if our risk engines and risk capability is not developed at the same time. That's the only point we're making there. All of these changes is going to have a significant impact on the staff. For example, from call center to contact center means retraining and upskilling and redeploying people who might have been in the back office to next to the front office, so to speak, so that we can handle taxpayer queries better. As we automate at the back end, and that was our strategic objective, as we said last year, more people will be becoming available to work either on the enforcement side or on the service side. And so what this slide explains is that, once again, as you know, Chair, through the SIACA process, we said there will be no job losses. We are selling us our staff. There will be no job losses. But we've put, through Opa Makashula and his team, and Edward Kiswith's his team, a change management process in place which ensures that we mobilize our people. And as we say on slide 41 and on slide 42, this modernization process begins to impact upon the way SARS operates, the way SARS is designed, and it impacts upon the redeployment and retraining of SARS staff. Briefly through the customs side, slide 43 and 44. On this side, Chair, we've been for the past 2 years or so developing a green paper on customs which would place us at the forefront of some of the changes that are happening in the, through the World Customs Organization and in other administrations, where you know that the concept of the authorized economic operator has emerged, and slowly there are countries in the world that are beginning, there's not more than 3 or 4 countries that have started utilizing this and developing bilateral agreements. And Percy Lowe and his team has also, on the basis of this, now developed a new and draft customs bill, which is undergoing certain consultations in the SACO community at this point in time. We're happy to report that we talked last year about developing a customs border control unit, and we'll show you some pictures in a moment which shows that we've now started delivering. We've also, with the help of the Canadian Border Security Agency, developed a cadet program where they will be assisting us in developing new training programs for customs staff. And our technology team, on the one hand, has now put in a new scanner in Durban. We'll show you some pictures about that. But it's looking at the feasibility of replacing our current customs system. Let me show you this picture, which you'll see on slide 46. This is the graduation parade, if you like, of the first 121 members of the Customs Border Control Unit at the Mahopong military base that took place on the 8th of May, recently, Chair. And we want to thank the South African National Defense Force for making their facilities available, for making some of their trainers available. And here is a new crop of customs office enforcement officers trained in a very different way from those that we've trained a few years ago. And they already deployed 133 members at the Oliver Tambo International Airport, and a new batch will now come in and has already started their training for this year's graduation. We also promised a dog detector unit. Two of them have started working, and they're also already huge successes at the airport and at border posts. Now, what these changes will do is also to start changing the customs operating model. And currently there's some analytical work going in which shows that less than 20% of traders in South Africa account for more than 80% of the volume of trade that we transact at our ports of entry. And that means that if we can introduce this authorized economic operator program for that 20%, we'll be securing, if you like, and getting the cooperation of the 20% of traders. So the processes are currently being looked at. I mentioned the new cadet program that we're working with our Canadian colleagues. And slide 48 gives you details of a number of other technology areas. And in essence, what we're saying here is the advances made on the tax side will also be used to bolster the work on the customs side. You will remember that Cabinet Lekotla took a decision that we should play the so-called lead agency role at the border. I'm happy to report that since then we've actually, through Jean Ravelle and his team, prepared a national integrated border management strategy, which was adopted at the January 2008 Cabinet Lekotla. There's good work going on at the Lebombo Rosana Garcia one-stop border post. And you can see the details there, Chair, of the operating model, the standard operating procedures, the facilities master plan. There's also work going on the 2010 front. We've set up a wellness program together with our sister departments for staff of all departments at the border posts. Border posts are very difficult places, as you know, to work at. And people at border posts have special needs. whether it's education, family needs, or their own welfare. And this wellness program will help us to address some of those issues. We've now appointed 32 port coordinators, and their job is to help the different agencies at the border to coordinate their work and work on a more systematic basis. And for the coming year, Chair, we need to establish the Border Management Coordinating Center, encourage better cooperative governance amongst the sister agencies, and formalize some of the procedures at the ports of entry. On social security, we don't have much to report. We trust the Treasury colleagues covered that yesterday. Our role is to participate in the interdepartmental task team and to undertake any reasonable task assigned to us that is within our capability to deliver. I'm going to, for now, Chair, cut out the business operations side. I've overreached my time. But on slides 55, 56, we spell out what our, if you like, volumetric targets are for this year, and they're contained in the update document that we've actually given you. Slides 57 and 58 gives you some indication of what our current human resource position is, as does, let me have a run out, as does this slide here, in terms of what our staff profile looks like. We've also got figures in terms of what progress was made in respect of disability issues being addressed in our staffing picture. And these are opportunities for people with disability in different parts of our operations as well. In some, Chair, we are saying that as far as the modernization process is concerned, and we picture this on slide 63, we recall that there are three phases. We realize that as a result of the work we did in 2007, that some of the things we thought will happen 2 or 3 years from now had to be brought forward. And so this year is a very challenging agenda in terms of introducing some of these changes. We understand that these involve, if you like, cultural or behavioral changes, both for individuals, employers, and ourselves as well. But I think that we will serve South Africa well if we can lay a platform upon which the administration and other role players can build upon in the future. In years to come, this modernization process will apply to provisional tax on the individual side, corporate income tax and VAT. So you can see that modernizing administrative models and processes is not something that can be done too quickly, but we're probably moving faster than most agencies around the world have done these sorts of things. And then we must be frank, Chair, that as a Tax and Customs Administration and as a country, for some time to come, one of our challenges is going to be to continue to sustain the compliance culture. There's two articles from a book which, with permission, we reproduced and gave to you, which talks about tax administration, the issue of capacity and consent, and building consent amongst the South African public and an understanding why they need to be tax compliant is crucial for future generations, as we've always told you, and building the institutional capacity within SARS which can sustain its efforts is equally a challenge. And so, one of the things that we are focusing on now is how do we create a platform for sustainability. We can have once-off 642 billion rand, but sustaining 10% or 8% growth over the next 10 or 15 years is certainly one of the challenges that preoccupies us. Internally, we're not sure, as we said, about 642, but we can continue to work towards it. Global tax competition is certainly an issue. There's a lot of coverage of these issues in the media today and over the past few weeks. But the big corporates are certainly presenting huge challenges to the fiscuses and tax administrations around the world. And for SARS itself, retaining leaders of the quality that we have currently, building the management team and technical skills in all aspects of our work, will remain a challenge that we will have to address. And maintaining and building on our technology platform, which acts as a basis for much of what we're doing, is also something that occupies our minds as well. So thank you very much for your patience, Chair. and we avail ourselves for any questions that you may have. If you don't have any questions, we'll welcome that as well.
Thanks, Commissioner. It was quite an elaborate and clear presentation. I see there are questions. Mr. Mnguni, Dr. George, Mr. Singh, Mr. Mlodo, Ms. Sibila, Mr. Mare. In that order, Mr. Mnguni.
Thanks, Chair. I must confess that I've read from page to page of the new book there, but I couldn't really come up with something I can ask from the book. Yeah, but Chairperson, I think my colleagues could have picked up something from the presentation. It is, as you said, a big culture change to make South Africans responsible and be, you know, tax compliant. Now the change that they have, we have to now to ask for returns in order to fail. Now I think the SARS, your approach is of the social approach. What will happen to people who don't request at the end of the day, they end up not paying taxes? What strategy do you have in place in order to have those people to be compliant? And my second question here is that amid the volatile market conditions and other variables, Treasury has revised its economic growth from the envisaged one of 6% in credit to buy, I think about 4.5% currently. Now the overall is 6%. Now, as SARS depends basically on economic growth to on the revenue that you collect, have you revised your target this year to align it with the Treasury economic growth? And my last question here is on the VAT. This is called now that the poor are actually hit adversely by the food price increases. Now, when you look at the order that have SARS done any study of what will be the impact if we zero-rate some of the foodstuffs in order to cater for the need of the poor in these very turmoil conditions. Thanks, sir.
Dr. George.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks very much for the reading pack. It was very interesting. In attachment number F, there was a study, 2008 pilot study, on the attitudes of South Africans towards taxation. It's a pilot study, so maybe it's not generalizable yet. But I'll read the conclusion because it's very interesting. It says, this study indicates that although the majority of respondents did not feel it is unfair to pay tax, all of the respondents were of the opinion that waste and corruption in government is high. In addition, the majority of the respondents felt that taxes is used by government for meaningless purposes and that government does not provide enough information about how they utilize taxpayer money. The respondents therefore felt that tax rates should be reduced. One of the most effective tools for making people more positive is to encourage them or empower them with knowledge. It is submitted that there is no better tool for government to positively influence the taxpayers of a democracy than to provide them with knowledge on how taxpayer money is utilized. So the question is SARS planning any intervention to manage taxpayers' perceptions on this particular matter, or maybe another study of some kind? Then the second question, it was mentioned that taxpayers can manipulate the system by submitting checks that can't be processed. Is there a penalty for this type of behavior? And then thirdly, retirement reform proposals indicate that SARS may well be managing some elements of the National Savings Fund, for example, providing or collecting contributions and distributing them to asset managers and the administrator on a monthly basis. Will SARS be able to manage this if implementation is planned for 2010? Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Singh?
Thank you very much, Chair. Firstly, thanks for the presentation. SARS seem to be doing excellent work, for better or for worse. Better for the majority of the people, but worse for some of them whose loopholes are being identified. The Commission indicated that it's too early to say whether the target of $642 billion is doable. What I'd like to know is what informs this target? How have they come up? Is it just so many percent more, or how was it informed? Secondly, on slide 27, the linking of the employer employer obligations to employees. Are these stringent penalties that you're going to impose not enough? Why should the employee now become a victim of the employer's non-compliance of sending the 501? And then the last question, I know because we're allowed to, is on staffing matters. Because I see you still have some challenges in terms of gender equity in your management. There's still 62% male. And if we look at the team here, it's probably, it shows that there are still more males than females. What's being done in that regard? And also, are there any special skills that people who want to work for SARS, are there any special skills that they require? Is there any interaction with the tertiary institutions by SARS to make sure that the school leavers, the matriculants, are put through particular courses that can even be sponsored by SARS so that you get a better quality of people coming through as part of your human resource contingent? Thanks.
And also the job leavers, as we head towards 2009. Is that what you were talking about? Mr. Molot.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is based on the documentation that was supplied to us on third-party reporting arrangements. I just want to establish from the Commissioner, let me start from saying that it's clear that you are doing quite a lot of work in this area. You've provided free software. You've entitled software providers. Now, this document does indicate that you need to invest a lot of resources in educating third-party providers. I just want to find out whether you have a plan ready for educating this third-party providers. And second question, in our interaction with SARS, the National Treasury, on taxation laws amendment bill, it's becoming apparent that corporate taxation is getting very complex. And my own assessment, I might be wrong, is that we don't have enough capacity within both institutions to start to monitor those transactions, because they are getting very complex. You look at dividend stripping, redomiciling companies. It's our engagement with the industry clearly indicates that there's a lot of money involved. It's billions and billions of rands that can be lost in those transactions. Are you focusing on this area, investing a lot of resources into it? My last question is on the accreditation of tax practitioners and intermediaries. In your strat plan, you indicate that you are already investigating some of the allegations on unprofessional conduct by tax practitioners. Can you elaborate more on this matter? Are there any trends that you are starting to pick up? And when, linked to that, would the new bill on regulation of tax practitioners help to contain some of those abuses?
Thanks. Are you okay? Can you still take more, or you want to begin to respond to this before I take? Okay. If you are comfortable, I can continue taking more. Can I? Okay. Because there are two now that are on my list. Ms. Sibila.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. My question is on page 45 under cooperative governance. Cooperative governance. I just want to check, Chairperson. It's mentioned here that SARS will initiate the implementation of the National Integrated Border Management Strategy. I just want to check if that plan is in place, and if not, what are the challenges? My second question is on page 6. No, sorry, it's under... 1 second. Okay. So I wanted to check, Chairperson, because it doesn't appear in the strategic document of the department. I wanted to check if there were any services that were contracted out by SARS, as it is required by public service regulations.
If there were any services that you've outsourced. The answer could be, if none, that's why it's not in the plan, in the strat plan. If there are, as to why they are not in the strategic plan. Because it is a requirement of the public service regulations. The next, is that all, Ms. Sibila, are you right? Okay. Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I also want to compliment the Commissioner and his team. I mean, you know, it's very hard and difficult to find real critical and I think contentious issues in here. And I also want to compliment you and Mr. Kiesvetter. I mean, the last year I've had a couple of issues that I've taken up with SARS, and it was dealt with fantastically. So really, you've done fine. No, it was not. No, I got a refund as well, yes, but I mean, it was about other issues and about customs issues and about others, about VAT of clients, and it was, everything was dealt with really, really professional. The feedback that I got was really, really positive, and I think that is good for SARS. So I want to compliment you first of all on that. Secondly, in terms of the scanning facilities, in Arberton, you indicated last year was, I think, 1 million. And I mean, we have seen the facilities. You know, what is happening in the meantime, you know, and the capacity of that. And in terms of that e-filing process, do you profile specific clients, taxpayers, or do you profile classes of taxpayers in terms of how to deal with that, you know, before it gets flagged? The second one is on customs, and specifically we are dealing with FICA legislation tomorrow. What is the relationship or the cooperation in that regard, you know, in cross border movement of people and even consignments? And I just want to know there. And then lastly, on staff, again, I want to compliment you on what you have given us with respect to disability and the employment of the disability that is able. And I also got positive feedback in the last year on that. But still, you are on 1.4%, which is still quite far from at least the 2%. You know, what are your plans there for the year ahead? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The last one is Ms. Mokota.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Commissioner, for the presentation. I just wanted to check a few issues with you. Firstly, I would go straight into the issue of compliance with the preferential procurement laws. I want to check how many of your big tenders have you awarded to African young and young people and women. I'm asking this because already I can see through the strategic plan that there are a lot of projects that are on the way. So just to check, how far are you implementing that one? The other part will relate to the role that SARS plays in the National Social Security tax and wage subsidy. I want to check how far are you with determining your role? Are there any challenges that you are facing, given the fact that it's not your sole responsibility? There's another issue that was raised in the presentation with regard to the differential operating model. How far beneficial is that to the different segments that you have identified? Lastly, with regard to the 2010 soccer tournament, I want to check the implications for tax and customs. Are you ready? And if not, what are the challenges that you are facing? And do you think you'll be able to meet the targets? Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure the commissioner has allocated some of the questions to other people so that they can justify their travel expenses. But also, in addition to some of the questions, Commissioner, there are two questions that came in relation to your human resources. If I may just check with yourself, I'm struggling to get whether, I mean, as to what your vacancy rate is. If you could just also just help me to locate where it is in your strat plan, because, you know, with all these good plans, you know, it's important to know exactly whether the capacity to deliver that in terms of your personnel is also taken care of. You see, it does appear somewhere where your employment staff, how many recruitments and whatever, but I mean, what's your vacancy rate currently? Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Mguni, what happens if people don't ask for returns and don't eventually pay? Well, strictly in terms of the Income Tax Act, the responsibility to register for tax, to submit a return, lies with the individual. SARS only does you, if you like, a favor by sending a return to you. But in terms of the law, the responsibility lies with the individual. Now, as this is new, we don't intend to be extremely difficult about it, but like all things that require a shift in behavior, we've got to do some pushing, and then we might have to do some giving, if you like. So if you don't mind, we won't say what we're going to give at this stage. For now, we'll only say what we want. And what we want is everyone will receive a letter. In that letter, we will be explaining that you will not receive a tax return this year, as you've done before. And let me reinforce that point. So of the 4 million odd returns that we've sent, last year, 1 million South Africans didn't fill in that return. They went onto the internet and did e-filing. So if you calculate the cost of the paper and the postage, it's not insignificant. So we're caught in a bit of a bind, if you like. If we can. It's quite easy to print all the returns and send them out. But we won't be making the best use of our resources in that regard. So you can be assured that SARS has always had a resilient but sympathetic approach. So if there are real difficulties, we'll try and respond to that in the right kind of way. But we understand that it's going to be a challenge both for us and for the taxpayer concerned. But we'll go the extra mile to keep reminding people in this regard. You then talked about revised targets and so on. I think the Deputy Minister would like to perhaps comment on that and on the question of VAT and food prices. And if there's an opportunity to add, I'll certainly do that.
Well, thanks, Commissioner. Quite clearly, there is a lot of discussion around the intervention of government in as far as dealing with issues of poverty, particularly the most vulnerable groups. The food prices, the escalation of food prices, that are also premised on the escalation of oil prices, it's a matter that is receiving attention. But I think members of parliament understand that this is work in progress. There is an interdepartmental committee that is currently being convened to look at the matter. And as soon as there is a clear indication of the exact nature of intervention, I think that matter would arise. And I think as things stand now, I know that a number of things have been bandied around, among them, for instance, zero rating, the whole range of suggestions. And I think it would be important for us to basically await the outcome of that. And on the basis of that, I think we would expect to a large extent for SARS to do some work in terms of beginning to deal with the impact of that. On the issues of growth, maybe let's start with modeling. You know, when we talk about the issues of revenue expectations, it is based on an economic model that is derived from within the family of the national treasury. And that in itself anticipates changes in the projection as far as growth is concerned. And it is on the basis of that, because these are not just thumbs up.
It is on the basis of that that the projections are basically given. But as we all know, that periodically, depending on the performance of the different elements within that model, there are revisions that occur. And hence, as the commissioner indicated, that there were revisions in the past year, but over and above that, that those revisions were met and surpassed. So that is an ongoing process. Modeling is a dynamic process. It's not a static one. It is influenced by the occurrences within the economy, and some of which we cannot anticipate because are part of the global economy. So to a large extent, I think we'll see it's very, very important to have a target that will basically ensure that SARS works towards a particular target. But it's also important to understand that because it is a result of a model, an econometric model, that in itself is subject to change depending on the variations in the elements that are part and parcel of the model and the changing situation global. So that is something that will be factored in, and I think all of us will be quite keen to look at how these change. It talks to inflation. It talks also to the impact, as the commissioner indicated, of rising interest rates on consumer spend. That in itself would basically have an impact on VAT. And it also talks to the profitability of corporates. That in itself will impact on the collections. And it also talks about the increases in investment that leads to greater absorption in as far as employment is concerned. That will talk to personal income taxes. So there are all these variables that may change depending on the economic environment. And hence, I think it's important for us to understand that. That's not a thumbs-up, but it's quite, we're operating within a very, very dynamic model.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. And if I may add, the Deputy Minister actually chairs a committee, and I think we've advised the committee on that before, which has the Reserve Bank, National Treasury, and SARS. And they meet frequently during the course of a year, and more frequently as we approach, say, October or February of a particular year. And in the budget review in Chapter 2, I think it is, or 3, you do have, if you, and I don't have it in front of me, Chair, but you will recall that you have the economic indicators that the Deputy Minister referred to. And in the course of the year, the Treasury then might revise that, as he indicated as well. So, Mr. Ngoni, the economy is one part, but I think sustaining a compliance culture, for example, is the second part. And so you could have very good economic growth. I've pointed this out to you many times, you recall. But if you don't have the right culture and the right administrative capability, then you won't get the money in either. So it's a combination of the economy, which is obviously the key driver of revenue, the compliance culture within a country, and what particularly elites in a particular society would promote, and the kind of culture that they would promote, as the documentation we've given you points out as well, and the capability of the tax administration as well. But as the Deputy Minister pointed out, we will have to wait and see and how the rest of the year pans out on this particular question. On the VAT side, I think he's covered that. We are cooperating with our colleagues in the Treasury to undertake whatever assessments and studies need to be done. I don't think we've reached any point of conclusion yet. But whatever decision the government makes, we'll be in a position, or we'll get ourselves in a position to ensure that we can implement those decisions. Dr. George, you referred to the study in the PAC, and you talk about what the study says, and all other studies say the same thing as well, that tax compliance is in one part a function of, if you like, social culture, historical factors, administrative capability. And ultimately, as the article points out, that study and the articles we've given you points out, people's consent or cooperation. And all of the factors that you've pointed out are, in fact, part of the equation. And all I can say as an administrator is that this is something that you as a committee might want to apply your minds to. Where are we in South Africa on these factors? Where and how do we influence the various factors that will ultimately influence the revenue collection in South Africa, and what is within the deputy minister's domain and your domain. You are, if you like, the political figures in South Africa. On our side, and that's the first to your latter question, what are we doing to empower people with information and, if you like, address their perceptions? You might recall that over several years now, in our advertising campaigns, not only do we say file your tax return or pay tax, we also say what's the benefit. So the benefit is delivery of housing or development of schools or providing health facilities or providing infrastructure for our country. And this year we will do the same again. So that, because there's nobody in government at the moment who takes central responsibility for that. So certainly we, having understood what this is, but one more recent study, we were aware of this for some time. And so for several years now, pay tax but understand the benefits of paying tax have been our two central messages. And we will continue to play whatever humble part we can play in influencing public perceptions in that regard. On the question of RD checks, ultimately, if your money hasn't come in on the time at the time it was supposed to come in, then there will be the necessary penalties depending on the tax that you're paying. So for PAYE, there's a particular legislative provision for that. For VAT, you can go up to 200% if we find that there's some real mischief going on, as sometimes there is. And so there are sufficient provisions within the law to cater for any misbehavior in that particular regard. Collections of contributions for Social Security, I mean, there are two questions in this particular regard, so let me address them together. One from Ms. Makoto as well. Our role, Chair, is merely to participate as one of several departments in the interdepartmental task team. In the earlier period, we took a lot of initiatives and did a lot of work with our Treasury colleagues about what the world is doing and what models are available and so on. But ultimately, this is a policy issue. And once the policymakers, which is the Interministerial Committee, give us some direction about what practically needs to be done, then we will take our cue from that. So at this stage, we don't want to be presumptuous about what we could do or must do or want to do. We will let these processes play themselves out, let the policy decisions be made, and if, for example, we are asked to act as a collector, as you pointed out, of contributions, then we collect lots of money. I mean, we collect PAYE, VAT, and over the last few years, if you look at UIF and SDL, the collections there have turned the UIF fund from a negative balance into a hugely positive balance as it stands at the moment, because it's linked to the PAYE system. And that connection actually helps us to keep the compliance going in terms of UIF. So it's how we decide to, if you like, construct the system, which base we build the system on, and whether we link the contributions to the PAYE system, if you like, and then, of course, it's fairly easily collectible on our side. The one proviso is to have the platform in place, and that's what the so-called PAYE employer reform is doing this year. It's to say, let's get the right relationship between the administration and the employer, because the employer is a key provider of information. Whether it's about the individual employee and all of their details. So if you look at the OECD document, that's the key. Because we must know who's working where at a particular point in time. If, for example, there is a move towards the wage subsidy. Today I could be working for you and tomorrow I could be working for him. But the wage subsidy might come to you instead of him, ultimately. But those are administrative issues that we will have to look at. So at this stage on Social Security, Chair, we await for the policy decisions. We participate and make our contribution at the what is called the IDTT, the task team, and I think the Treasury will be in the best position to report to you on details of where they're going. I hope they did that yesterday. Mr. Singh, your point about 642 and what informs the target, I think the Deputy Minister addressed that earlier on and some of my comments. Employers and employees, why do we aren't the penalties enough? I think partly the penalties were too weak initially, so we tried to strengthen them. but it's also a behavior that we didn't do too much about in the past, if you like. So, again, I can only refer you to the best practice that you see in the documentation of the OECD. Now, that's the goal, where you can get real-time information from an employer. You've just left this job, you've joined so-and-so, and so on. That's the ideal we need to get to. Now, these are the first steps that begin to take us in that direction. But as I pointed out to Mr. Mguni, this being the early stages of where we're going, we will take each step at a time, and depending on the feedback, advice, and troubles we run into, we'll try and manage this in a way in which ultimately, if you like, everybody comes out more comfortably. Staffing issues, I'm going to refer to my colleague. He's got to earn his salary now, Mr. Makashula.
Thanks, Commissioner. Thanks.
Oh, the mic's full. Oh, thanks. Honorable Member Singh, we do have challenges on the gender side. Fortunately, about a week ago, we launched our flagship leadership development pilot group, which was a group of around 160 managers at branch level and team leader level, which is just outside the senior management ranks. And we want to use this as a feeder group into, you know, into management opportunities when they arise. Out of that group, 70% were female. And it was a targeted intervention, particularly to address, you know, the issues of that thing, at our gender challenges at senior management level. And we hope that this intervention, as one of the many prompt strategies that we are going for, would help to start, you know, addressing the feeder group. Because the problem with gender at senior management level is you're competing, you know, in a pot of very few people, you know, or available few skills that are out there. And we've learned that we need to also address, as the second prong, you know, the issues of retention of female at the senior level, to create conditions that are conducive. As you have correctly pointed out, I mean, to have a team that is dominated by men, you know, makes it very difficult for female employees at the senior level to be able to find people that they can build solidarity with. So we have a coaching program that we have started. We started with the high-level senior managers going through individual assessments to actually find out the areas of development and having that development plan. So that will give us an opportunity actually to say which specific areas do we need to support, you know, our female colleagues in order for them to succeed. And that's a very, you know, thorough and scientific process that we are following in that sense. So with that, we hope that it will help to start addressing some of these things. But the most physical one that I'm very hopeful that it will start to address that is the development of the next lower rank that would feed into those opportunities as they arise. And in the graduate level, we also revamped our talent management and recruitment processes. We have recently launched a new branded process where we have deliberately, in order to leverage, you know, the fortunate, you know, positive image that SARS has in South Africa, yeah, to go out there and brand ourselves in such a sense as, you know, one of the public service organizations where people can come and serve and make South Africa better. When we advertise in SARS, we get a lot of applications, but we get wrong people coming to apply, people that will not stay with us, you know, the long haul, you know. So we're trying to differentiate, and we've come up with a matrix of assessment with descriptions of values, much more accurate, you know, profiling of our jobs, so that, you know, we attract the right person in these things. And we launched it. If you look at the at some of the media, print media that we use, you'll soon start to see billboard of our advertising coming, and the message that will be coming through there at the graduate recruitment and at the general recruitment level will be to say we want people that share our values. We want people that are committed to the public service. We want people that want to make South Africa better and are prepared to really share, and you know, the values of our country. We also have an ambassador program at universities and high school
that we have launched, we have actually kidded these kids and given them, you know, a very hip and cool, you know, clothing that you know, that goes out with very clear messages to say, you know, it's cool to work for SARS, you know. SARS is these things, and we have designed, you know, we deliberately had the hip designers to come up with this clothing so that these people that, you know...
Taking all the secrets out.
Oh, yes, yeah, you know. that really, you know, the people that embody these values, you know, are seen to be associated with us in southern and high schools. And you'll start seeing if your kids are any of those that meet our values, you'll probably see them coming home with some of our branded things. So that's what we're trying to do on the side.
Okay, Chair. Mr. Maloto, third-party reportees, and what resources are we putting into educating employers? We started, as I pointed out earlier on, the meeting between some of our colleagues and the payroll software providers. We had a very high-level meeting with about 35 CEOs of the top companies in South Africa with the minister. We are now in touch. We will be having regional forums as of next week in each of the provinces and bigger cities to talk to employers and employer organizations. So in the next few weeks, we'll certainly be investing in that, contacting employers directly, preparing our office staff to also receive people and inform them of what needs to be done. So we're making a fairly big investment, and you'll begin to feel that as we go forward. You raised quite an important question as far as on corporate taxes, their complexity, and that's what I referred to earlier on, if you remember, the tax competition that's going on around the world, which has serious consequences for many fiscuses. But let me activate Kosi Low, who will have a view on corporate taxes, and Matsubana Matwa, who heads a large business center, and what his experience is there.
And somebody must explain why Kosi Low's name was not on the list. You know? Maybe he was trying to remain anonymous.
Thank you, Chair. I think corporates, it's not just in South Africa, but internationally, I mean, corporates, the corporate systems and the tax systems are more complex than as far as individuals are concerned. I think that's, I mean, partly because, you know, corporates, especially your big corporates, they operate in a very sophisticated environment. They take part in, you know, complex economic transactions, etc., and it is an ever-changing economic environment, and unfortunately, you know, the tax regime has got to keep track with all those changes in the economy, because if you don't, you're going to fall behind and your tax base is going to shrink. From a SARS point of view, what we are trying to do, obviously from a together with the National Treasury, we're trying to, from a policy point of view, do the necessary changes wherever there are possible loopholes in the system and plug them and keep in track with international developments as far as tax systems are concerned. From a more operating side, I think we've, through the segmented approach, we have established the LBC, and I think my other colleagues will talk about how the LBC operates. We've also put some other measures in place. Chair, you will remember about, I think it's about 2 years ago now, where we came with a new anti-avoidance rules in the different tax act, where we sharpened that up. We have also, a few months ago, when after you've approved the necessary enabling legislation, we have now published the new rules for reportable arrangements. That's for sort of impermissible type of tax schemes, that those schemes must be reported to us at a much earlier stage, not just when the tax return is submitted, and that enables us and gives us a much earlier warning of what the latest types of schemes are, and it allows us to act
much faster how we should deal with these schemes, whether we should change the law or whether we can challenge it in terms of the current laws, etc. Then internationally, as I said, schemes are not just developed locally. Many of these schemes are developed internationally, and they come, you know, onto our shores as well. So it's very important that we keep close ties with our other revenue agencies, that we can share information amongst ourselves. And, you know, the double taxation agreements that are also coming through your committee, that gives us the necessary ability that we can share information amongst ourselves. Then, as the Commissioner said, through the OECD, we also participate through those structures and share information. Although we only have observer status there, we take part in quite a number of the working committees of the OECD, and especially there is also a committee on tax avoidance, which some of our people on a regular basis attend, and where we also become aware of what are the latest developments in tax avoidance over in the world, so that we can act in a proactive way as far as that is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Kosi. Thanks, Chair. I think the tax is a very complex product. I mean, I was very fortunate in the last 2 weeks where I was participating in a meeting between India and Brazil and ourselves. We were talking about the tax challenges. It was very interesting to realize from the discussion that the challenges we have in South Africa are global. For instance, we spoke about the challenges in terms of the international tax, the transfer pricing. Part of the output of the discussion was that we agreed as three countries that we need to work very close to one another. What we have agreed, among others, is to have a delegation from our country, Brazil and India, firstly to participate, if possible, through video conference. If not, I think we agreed that sometime in July, we need to meet in India and to discuss those cases that they've experienced in the past regarding transfer pricing, because India seems to be ahead of the two countries where they told us that in all the cases they involved in transfer pricing, for instance, they were able to prosecute the people that were involved. Secondly, what we're doing locally in LBC Lightning Center, every Friday we have something that we call it technical tax. The whole idea of technical tax discussion is for us to discuss live cases. For instance, if one of our auditors has come across a very complex case and he managed to track it, he will come and present the case and try to help us understand exactly how did he manage to firstly identify the risk, secondly, how did he treat the risk, and thirdly, how do we teach the remaining team to be able to pick up from the lessons learned. And the other thing that we also do, we try currently to interact, as Kosi mentioned, in the OECD. And there's a lot of lessons learned. I mean, there's common approach in terms of how do you approach these taxes. One of the difficulties, obviously, is that we're fighting for the few resources, as it was mentioned earlier. Tax experts in this country, by definition, are very limited. And then the big four firms and the banks are also competing with us on penny for penny. And you'll appreciate and probably sympathize with us in the sense that we don't have the kind of resources, financial resources, to be able to can contain those kind of people. The difficulty is that we as SARS want to make an impact in terms of tax morality, in terms of managing the tax gap. But the challenge is that how do we begin to do it with the less resources we have? So we are talking to some of the people outside the audit firms. Some people join us purely for simple reasons that in SARS one advantage is that you might not be able to give them the money they get in the private sector, but we're giving them the full scope of what tax is. They're able to get in tax from start to finish. We're not limiting them to a particular tax, because what we've discovered over a period of time, in these big companies, they are focusing on a small portion of what regards the taxation as a whole. But the beauty about working for large businesses and SARS as large is that you get involved from individual tax, company tax, transfer pricing, CGD, you name it, you have that opportunity. So from that point of view, we've got an advantage. And what we start doing now, we also, as part of trying to understand, is we've got involved in something regarding as enhanced relationship which is a product of the FTA, which the Commissioner of the Cherry has been our chair, to try and begin to understand how this corporate is dealing with their taxes, so that we try to bring the knowledge back into our own internal process. What are the tax strategies? What are the internal controls? What are the requirements they use when they go to a consultant? How do they make those decisions? It's very important for us to understand how tax outside people are working. We've been very fortunate in the last 3-4 months where we've been able to recruit people from those particular big four firms who are now bringing the insight into us to be able to begin to put the controls around so that we can be able to tackle these challenges. But I don't want to create the impression that it is very difficult. The skills are very limited, and then people sometimes compete. But we're doing all the best we can to manage those challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The next question from Mr. Morato was on the question of accreditation of tax practitioners and intermediaries. Mr. Kiswetu.
Thanks, Commissioner Chair, Mr. Molotov. Mr. Molotov also asked about the registration of tax practitioners. Currently, we have about 21,000 practitioners that are registered, and our estimate is about 10,000 who are not registered. The registration of tax practitioners, which is currently in a work in progress, seeks to regularize and place all of the work of practitioners within a regulated framework. Some of the observations we make, Mr. Monato, is that we've seen up to sometimes 4 practitioners working off the same practitioner number. For example, you asked for some of the trends that we see. Approximately 10% of registered practitioners, our observation is, are in their own tax affairs not compliant. So apart from acting on behalf of clients, they themselves have not submitted their returns or have outstanding issues, which is quite a large number and gives you a sense of the culture of compliance even in the practitioner community. We also have instances that where the relationship between the practitioner and the client, or the relationship between SARS and the client, is often arbitraged by the practitioner. So we have that example, for example, an instance where a client was angry and vented that anger towards us because we have supposedly delayed the return. But it turns out that the practitioner has had the information from the client months ahead, but in their own process have only submitted that, you know, 7 weeks later, and therefore the taxpayer has a bad experience. And it's easy for a practitioner who chooses not to be quite ethical up front to then say, look, I'm waiting on SARS. So our sense is that there's a significant amount of work to be done to improve the culture of compliance amongst practitioners themselves, to identify and highlight practitioners who do not honor both the letter and the spirit of the law. And the bill, once it's passed, will give us, at the moment we act mainly within the provisions of the Income Tax Act, but once the bill is approved, it will strengthen our arm to single out practitioners who choose to break the law, and obviously to hold them to account. Thank you.
The eventual intention is to get into some kind of accreditation scheme. We had one for customs intermediaries, but the AEO one that we referred to earlier on would actually lift the bar quite significantly, and there are similar ideas on the tax practitioner side as well, but that's work in progress. But the idea would be that if you file on time, if you file accurately, and if you are not making too much of mischief, then there must be some benefit for you as a practitioner and the clients that you actually represent. On the other hand, if you help people cook up their books and so on, then there must be some consequences as well. Right now, everybody can walk away quite comfortably and do whatever they actually have to do. So in cooperation with them, we hope we can bring about, and that's what the bill will do, is to create a regulatory framework. Now, there's always this debate about too much or any regulation versus none. And in our experience and view, we do require, let's call it a framework, within which there is some regulation of this fraternity, because there are any number of examples where ultimately you will get sobbing taxpayers coming to our offices and saying, but I left it to so-and-so to pay my VAT, and I left it to so-and-so to prepare my returns, and 6 months later I find out that they actually haven't done it. And there must be some accountability for the services that they actually provide, similar to what the Financial Services Board is doing in terms of regulating financial advisors. So that's the direction, if you like, we're heading in, and the bill will begin to lay the basis for that. Mr. Savitla, your questions are twofold. One was integrated border management. Jean Ravelle will address that, and I'll come back to services outsourced.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Commissioner. Yeah, we like was reported here on the presentation, we developed a national integrated border management strategy, which was adopted by Cabinet Lekhutla in January this year. There is an implementation plan, a concept plan in place. We further developing it. We hope to start implementing pretty soon. The only challenges that keep on coming up from time to time are relating to coordination among government departments operating at ports of entry. In the main, it is caused by the fact that the BCOCC as a structure is not a statutory body. People cooperate voluntarily. So I cannot say to a department, why are you not cooperating? I don't have any right to do that because of that voluntary nature of cooperation within that environment. So yeah, that's the only challenge that I can think of now. In the main, we I think we're grappling with the issues that we're supposed to be grappling with. Thanks.
And that's the challenge around the world, Chair, that you have several agencies, and each one has their own turf, and very few countries around the world have moved beyond that. And we hope that our constitution and its Chapter 3 and the legislation that emerges from it will begin to create a framework for that kind of culture. But we're getting there slowly. On the question of outsourcing, the general approach within SARS is that our business is, let's call it, sensitive business. And we can't really, we've had any number of proposals over the years. If you give us X percentage, we'll collect that for you at the border, for example. I can remember that one very clearly. And we will deliver so many billion rands to you, but you don't have to now invest in people and systems. We'll create the systems. But that collection is our core business. So you will not find, if you like, too much of our core business moving in that direction as a matter of policy. We did experiment when we had shortages in terms of debt collectors, but that was in the past. I just checked with my colleagues. It doesn't happen any longer. So to multiply our numbers, we will bring in a debt collection agency and say, this particular debt within this band with privacy rules and everybody signing the necessary agreements, collect that for us. But we found it's better to develop that capacity and spend that money internally and build our own resources. There are two areas. Security is the one area in which we do this, and e-filing might be a second area. But when we look at our annual report, then we'll give you the full figures. But generally, our policy would be no outsourcing of some of the key functions that we actually have. Mr. Murray, your question about Alberton and your memories of your visit there, Mr. Ho will refresh them for you.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. As you saw in Alberton, we were very pleased how it turned out, and we're intending to roll that process out across the country. By March next year, we hope to have four similar centres in the areas of one in the Pretoria area, one in Cape Town, and one in Durban. And we need to still do more to perfect the process, but we are confident that we've got the basic process under control,
And with the new enhancements we're planning this year, we think it will get even better. And then it's a national rollout. And we will be able to digitally scan all our documents in that environment. It also links to the contact center that the commissioner has mentioned. The ability to provide the information at the fingertips of people who are phoning to ask for questions. In the past, if it's a piece of paper, we then need the call agent to try and contact the person closest to that file, to be able to find the file, to be able to then get back with the answer. Clearly, with the intention to do much more at the point of interaction with the taxpayer, the ability to digitize that information and make it available then wherever the question is asked in SARS is a fundamental point of where we're trying to go.
Mr. Pillay, and if need be, Mr. Ho, e-filing and customs and FICA.
Mr. Pillay.
Thank you. Generally, in the profiling, we do both. We look at classes or categories of people, and we look at the individuals. So, in the approach to segmentation, as would have seen on the screen, we've seen the 10 segments that we want to focus on. And we look for, let's say, the shape of that category of people. What can we expect? What are the numbers? What are the earnings? What's the general trend in terms of behavior? But when we're selecting a case to deal with, then it's very much individual. There'll be a set of objective criteria or a statistical basis from which to choose the cases. So we'd actually use calls. Thank you.
On customs and FICA, which Mr. Pillay avoided answering, he will deduct part of his salary for that. Generally, we try to build a link, if you like, between the Reserve Bank and ourselves to see whether movement of goods and movement of money has some relationship. And there are some investigations that have happened in the enforcement area where that's proves to be quite fruitful because you begin to see mismatches in this particular area. Secondly, the SARS participates very actively in its FICA responsibilities with the FIC itself, and Mr. Pillay and Mr. Michel have built up new ways of liaising between SARS and the FIC within the framework of each of our legislation in order that we could become a lot more effective in both detecting transgressions and acting upon them. I'm not sure if he wants to add anything on that. Then he can save his salary. You know.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, as the Commissioner said, there are regular meetings. And very, very good cooperation. Particularly on the customs side, we had set up a joint team at OTIA in the last financial year to look at the problem of the smuggling of cash. So there's continuous. In fact, we met again yesterday with Marek. And our cooperation is actually extending to see how different parts, different institutions in the whole financial chain amongst government can help to manage the whole chain together rather than in a fragmented way. Because the lessons that are coming out is that because we all have our secrecy laws, we all deal with this in our own way. There are cracks in the system, and there are breaches of the system. So there's been consistent work for the last 6 months
to develop an approach of how we can pull together rather than push apart. I think good progress is being made. Thank you, sir.
Chair, Mr. Makashula will deal with both your issue on vacancy rates and Mr. Marais's question, our plans on the disability side.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Commissioner. This year, Mr. Marais, we tried to anticipate the question of disability. As you can see, we've tried, you know, the effort of putting some slides. We have just completed a recruitment, a panel of recruiters, you know, and for the first time in SARS history, we now have a recruitment agency on the panel, particularly to address, you know, the targets that we have set ourselves for this year. I was trying to get the target for this year, but I know it's around 2%, you know, for next year. But in order to do that, I mean, you need to have an infrastructure in place. And that slide on the board there is something that we worked on to see where are the opportunities for disabled people. And what we have found out is, you know, in national operations, for people that are partly sighted, there could be opportunities of up to 15%. But remember, some of those occupations are occupied. So it's not necessarily to say they are 15%, yes. It's up to 15% of people that work in national operations can be partly sighted. You know, for example, call centers would be for physically disabled and partly sighted, for example, you know, and they will all fall under national operations. So we've identified the opportunities now. We've got a recruitment agent that specializes on disabled people, and then once the occupational opportunities come, and, you know, they will offer us those opportunities to actually fill those vacancies with disabled people. So I cannot say directly say where will we be by next year. It's driven also by occupation. 2%. Yeah. And then on the vacancy rate, there's a slide that the commissioner had in his presentation, Chairman. Yeah. This one. Yes. Which gives a picture of where we are going. And then if you go on the book that was handed, the strategy document to page 51, it gives you some of the forecasts, you know, in terms of resources that we are anticipating. But for last year, as you can see, we grew our headcount by 534, where we had an attrition rate, which is the nearest equivalent to a vacancy rate of 7.43%, which means 1,061 opportunities were created. And then because we are on a drive to bring in more skills into SARS, we appointed more people than the vacancies that were existing by a figure of about 3.74%. So in essence, we are ahead of the curve in terms of our vacancy rate. And as I mentioned earlier, we are experiencing some problems in certain areas to attract the appropriate skills, and that will be like in IT, LBC, and so on. But in general, for generic skills and career profiles or job profiles that we have in SARS, we have more than the number of people that actually are interested in joining SARS, which is a very fortunate position to be in, because all that we have to do is to really make sure that the experience that they expect in SARS is left when they finally join us. So I'm not sure if it answers your question. Thanks.
And given the dynamic environment we're getting into, Chair, the concept of vacancy is slightly different in our case from, say, a normal government department. Because we now, particularly this year, we if you like, creating certain jobs, we're doing away with other jobs, but not losing any people in the process as well. So one of the difficulties that we have is how not to lose jobs, so to speak, change the functions and processes and operating model, but keep the efficiency going and keep people on board at the same time as well. So, but be assured that Mr. Makashula does earn his salary.
The Honorable Makoto raised about three or four issues, Chair. The first is on procurement. Again, in the annual report, we'll give you greater detail. Off the cuff, we can tell you that 55% of all of our money or procurement deals go to BEE accredited companies, so businesses. And within our procurement processes, we ensure that we're compliant with whatever the legislative requirements are, whether it's a small tender or a big tender. The second point we need to make is on the bigger tenders that you referred to, we're now talking about tenders that do involve 50, 100 and more million rands. And in many cases, even let alone black or African companies, South African companies, have difficulty in providing the kind of resources that are required for some of the bigger developments that we're actually involved in. What we do is two things. One is to ensure that the big guys, in the course of delivering whatever they need to deliver to us, and if they are involving subcontractors, that they are sensitive to the requirement to get black businesses involved. On the other hand, in order to ensure that we perform our work within the mandate, which says spend your money wisely and get value for money, we try to avoid intermediaries as well, who might be making 5% for not for merely taking a box from one place and delivering it to another place. And in the IT world, that's one of the challenges that we face as well. But we'll give you more details on that when we meet you again. But you can be assured that we try to achieve the objectives that you've defined wherever it is possible, sometimes creating discomfort for other people as well. Your point about Social Security, we touched upon earlier on in the way we've answered that. The differentiated operating model, what will be the benefit? The differentiated operating model is the implementation of segmentation. So if we say large business above 250 million rand turnover is one segment, we have the large business center that gives them an end-to-end service. And the benefit for that is that you don't have to run around 20 SARS offices. You go to one place, there's one relationship manager, and all your concerns are addressed there. Now, it's 3 years old, approximately. And as we grow it, with all the challenges that my colleague spoke about, I mean, we lose skilled people all the time because the private sector comes along and says, we'll double your salary. So that's a challenge that we face on the government side. But the benefit for business is a one-stop service, if you like. Similarly, we'll be creating this customer segment unit within which there is already a small business unit. So we've got about a half a dozen people who focus only on small business, understanding what their needs are, influencing the kind of products that we develop. So for each of those categories, we'll be able to influence them. Government, for example, is a huge employer. It employs 1.5 odd million people. Now, when that government unit gets off the ground, and then if you link that to the so-called employer changes, government being an employer, and the government department at national, provincial level, and then later municipalities, will also have to participate in these changes that we are talking about. That unit will focus on government. It will go out to government departments. Our aim is to work with them, inform them of how they could assist South Africa by being participants in this process, and give them whatever advice and assistance they require to actually come on board. So I can go through each segment, and each segment will provide benefits for SARS on the one hand and benefits ultimately for each of those segments. But I suppose at the sharper end, it's about understanding behavior and needs and saying, would you rather phone us or come to an office or work with us through the internet? And if you understand that, then we make sure that we structure our services accordingly as well. It's no point going to somebody who has internet facilities and uses all of that and say, come to our office and create space in our offices for those people to actually do their work. And so 5, 6, 7 years down the line, I think you'll have a differently structured SARS. If I give you an example, the Internal Revenue Service of the United States about 5 years ago, took a decision to work on segment model. So they have three basic segments, and the entire tax base is divided into these three segments, and their organization is structured along those segments. So it's large business, it's sort of the upper part of small business and medium business, and individuals and what they call charity organizations. And all of their staff are divided into these three units. They have three sort of commissioners for each one, and one national commissioner. And that's a fully segmented organization. We are, let's say, quasi-segmented, and we might not become entirely segmented because our front offices might serve many of the segments that we are talking about. Our back office, where all the processing takes place, might also serve many of the segments. But on our service side and on our risk side, we might focus on those segments to understand them better, and that helps us. 2010, if Jean Ravelle can cover some of the work of the unit that we've set up, and Kosi Lo, what are some of the tax issues and how we're preparing for that.
Mr. Ravelle.
We're involved in from a coordination point of view in government. We participate in the technical coordinating committee as chaired by the Deputy Minister of Finance. We also participate in other structures convened by both government and the organizing committee. For example, the Safety and Security Coordination Committee and the Logistics Committee, which is looking into government infrastructure, amongst others, at ports of entry. So from a coordination point of view, we're looking into that. We're also looking into, like the question was asked, how do we monitor those government guarantees given, which relate to issues of taxation and customs duty, for instance. We're looking into setting up, developing capacity to monitor the implementation of the guarantees themselves. For example, the tax-free bubbles that will be created need to be monitored and ensure that things that are destined to be sold in those bubbles only land up there, not somewhere else where they were not supposed to go. So from a coordination point of view, we're looking into that, Chairperson.
Chair, just to add on that, remember, government initially gave certain guarantees as far as the tax issues are concerned. We codified those guarantees last year. You will remember we brought the proposed legislation to your committee, and it was adopted, and it's now forming part of a schedule. It deals with the taxation or the status of FIFA and its different affiliates, and also how certain goods that will enter South Africa will be treated from both, say, from a customs and VAT point of view, from an importation point of view. Certain goods, say, for example, a player or media people needs to bring in certain goods into South Africa, which they will take with them when they leave South Africa again, there will be no duties on some of these goods. Even some of these goods can be consumed in South Africa and will also be duty-free. Then we also had to create specific exemptions and benefits as far as the sale of goods in certain areas around the stadiums, etc. But all of those guarantees have now been codified and are in place.
Are there further questions? Because if there are further questions, I would just like to note the hands so that we can just break for tea and then come back and proceed with them. But can we then just note the hands before we do that? Mr. Maraya, Mr. Singh, Mr. Mngoni. Those are the hands, but I want us to break for tea. Commissioner, I see that most of your target dates are March 2009. Is this a deliberate way of making sure that this committee doesn't oversee your performance? After tea.
Maybe we were able to say that the father would have put the hand. So, for him, one of the folks will be excellent.
I am.
Do a summary. I'm sure you attended that meeting with the LOA and the
LOA. Yes.
SAIA.
Yes, I did.
So that's Niabat.
Yeah, that's Niabat.
Where can I get the audio of that?
On the website. On the website. Listen, if you give me your email address, I could probably email it to you.
And then will that be?
Look, I'll speak to Pumza when I get back. She'll handle all that.
So the actual the thing is the date.
Because I don't have audio on me, do I? No, I don't. I don't have it on my flash drive, I'm just thinking.
So don't want to give me your email.
You can email me, I'll give you my email. Give me the card, I'll write it on my back. You keep it all together, all the information. You know where I'm from and everything. Okay. Okay, that's my email address. You can email the email address, but you can email Pumza, because he's actually the one who's going to be sending you whatever you need. You'll actually just be working through me. I'll talk to him when I get back to the office about getting you an audio recording. I don't know how you access that on the internet. Did you go to our website quickly? Let's see, the content. Now, can Matthias connect anything? If not, you can email me or email Pumila, or just call her actually. It's a much faster way to do it. And she will help you out with the
recording. We also do recordings.